This week on Wells Tech, Sally and I do a debrief on our unconference from last week in New Ulm. Had a lot of people there talking about some good things with education and technology, ministry and technology. We'll share some videos, some photos, lots of good stuff coming out, plus our tips and picks of the week. This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network, sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back to Wells Tech, episode 307 for September 17th, 2013. My name is Martin Spriggs, and this is a show where we talk about technology, ministry, where those two meet. And joining me, as usual, Sally Draper from New Ulm, Minnesota. Hi, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. And apparently technology and ministry met right here in New Ulm, Minnesota this weekend.
That's
we
right.
We are coming off the first ever Wells Tech Camp and have lots of interesting things to share from that experience.
It was a neat weekend. I didn't know what to expect going in. I had never personally been to what we're calling an unconference. So fortunately, members of our planning committee had, and they assured us many times that everything would be okay.
And I think it turned out just great. There was definitely a lot of excitement in the air. When you get together 100-plus people who want to talk technology and ministry, good things are sure to happen, right?
Yep. And I guess some initial impressions. I think that when people came, most of the people there, we did a quick poll at the beginning, most of them had not been to an unconference either. So the concept is you come to the conference, and at the beginning of the conference, you put together the agenda. And those people who are willing to speak to items, maybe moderate a session. And we had, five sessions going on at once, right?
Correct, and four different time slots. So a total, a blank slate with 20 slots to fill, basically. And it wasn't hard filling them up. We had kind of encouraged people to bring their ideas. We did it in a very non-techie way, though, and I'm not sure I like that part of it. They wrote their ideas on Post-it notes and posted them on a board, which is way cool. And I have a Wordle that I'll share in the show notes with all the different ideas that were posted. It's really neat to see that process happen. But then we had a lot to deal with without the use of like our favorite mind maps or technology sorting kind of tools. And so that was an interesting process. We did our best to kind of group together ideas that were suggested and come up with an agenda.
I think that was a little stressful for me. I don't know about you, Sally. That was, you know, my left brain kicking in saying we need a little bit more on top of our game. And I think it turned out fine. I think we got a wide variety of topics, which was great. I think that's part of the beauty of this kind of conference. You get at some of the topics that people are most interested in rather than trying to guess. But I think if we were to do this again, and I'm actually doing this in a conference we're doing in Las Vegas in November, we're kind of doing an on-conference kind of concept for outreach, distance outreach and technology. I think what we're going to do there is probably do a little bit more work beforehand, maybe encourage submission of topics in an online form, and then maybe vote. I'm thinking maybe some kind of electronic voting process online before people get there, so that when they hit the ground, you're not doing kind of the ad hoc, you know, Post-it note thing, but you've accomplished the same thing just a little bit ahead of time, and now people can come to the conference with some expectations, or people with some experience or skills in the areas that you're talking about can bring stuff that's appropriate to that conversation.
I think that's a great idea, Martin. One other thing maybe to add on to that might be to leave a few of those slots open for the end of the conference. So as the conference develops, then you figure out your last sessions at the end.
It's not a bad idea.
Yeah, kind of feed off of where the discussion led, because it's really open-ended in this concept, and that's pretty cool. The other thing I would think that I kind of took away from it was we had a lot of time in sessions. We planned 4 1-hour sessions. I think we maybe could have made our sessions a little shorter and given people more time for the face-to-face interactions that come outside the session, because it seemed like people would pick up on something someone said and want to go talk to them person to person kind of thing. So giving people a little more flexibility to have some of those ad hoc kind of conversations among themselves probably wouldn't be a bad idea.
Yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of breathing room, so to speak, during the day. We got together the morning and then in the afternoon, but it was kind of wall to wall breakouts. And that's probably counter to the concept of an unconference, of just bringing people together who want to talk about what they want to talk about. So yeah, I think you're right.
The other advantage of having a little bit more advanced planning would be to balance out your sessions. And that was hard for me to do on the fly. I need time to think a little bit about how to structure, 20 different sessions, but you don't want all your education things to happen at the same time, because people then have to pick and choose between. You want to have more strands that people can follow or whatever. So I think that a little more advanced planning give me a little bit more of a comfort level for future unconferences. But having said all of that, a very successful day and a great place to start and learn, you know, how to do these even better in the future. And hopefully we will have more Wells Tech conferences in the future.
Yeah. Another observation is the mix in the room is kind of important. If you have just a bunch of people who are coming just to listen and absorb, like maybe a traditional conference, if that's their expectation, I don't think it goes as well. I think this is kind of a working conference where you bring at least something to the table, if nothing more than questions that can be thrown out there and thrown around and answered, hopefully.
Yeah. And even though we didn't have specific speakers planned for the conference, I feel like there were some of our tech leaders who did get tapped as far as sharing their knowledge. Maybe it was about one-to-one computing, yep, or Google Chromebooks or whatever it is. And they were more than willing to speak up and share their knowledge. But I hope that they also got fed in some of the sessions they were part of, so that they weren't just there giving and not receiving anything in the process.
Yep. Kudos to you, Sal. You were kind of the brains behind this operation. And from my vantage point, things went very smoothly.
Actually, I owe some serious kudos to Professor Larry Zaire from Martin Luther College, who I looked up at the beginning of the day, was carrying in a carafe of coffee. And I thought, I didn't buy any coffee for today. I think we might have had a revolt before the first session ever kicked off if Larry hadn't kicked in and made coffee from the MLC faculty lounge. I don't drink coffee, so I didn't think of buying coffee for the day. And that will definitely be at the top of my shopping list if we ever do another one of these.
Lots of details that need to be taken.
Oh, my goodness, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, including like follow-up evaluations and things, we're still trying to iron out an evaluation form that we can email out to everyone, because I didn't have that done either. So live and learn.
Yeah. Probably one of the highlights for some of the attendees were the giveaways. We had some awesome stuff to give away.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the Mimio products that we gave away. We were expecting to give away a Mimio Teach Bar. The guys from BG Innovations were there demonstrating. It was really cool technology. And they kicked in a Mimio View as well, which is a really unique document camera. So two amazing giveaways from Mimio. And those were wonderful additions to classrooms and things. But probably the most popular giveaway we had was the iPad. Thanks to our friends at Final Web, we had a 16 gig iPad to give away. And that was the climax of the whole day. Everybody was waiting to see if they were going to be a winner. And my good friend now, Sela Elmquist, who's an MLC student, it was her name that was called for that prize. And Martin, I think she cried. She was so excited. She came down kind of a little bit of a walk from the upper levels of the auditorium, and she was just in shock. It was special.
That was cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And Sally, you captured some things in both still and video, which we will share as well, right?
That's right. Each of the rooms actually had a Google Hangout live streaming, and I looked at stats. There were a couple of people that tuned in during the day, so that was pretty cool. That was kind of a live and learn experience as well. We put a webcam in the room, so we weren't really sharing the screens that were being used. I'm not sure if that was the most effective video, but the good news is we got audio archive of all the discussions. And so, you know, the video may not be much to watch, but you can listen in on particular discussions if you're interested. We also took live notes using Google Docs during each of the sessions. And those are probably super valuable to people to go back and find all the links and discussion topics that were covered in each of the sessions. I know there was one on I think on mobile apps where they just filled up this Google Doc with tons of links to really cool mobile apps.
Yeah, that was neat. Yep.
So all of that is actually on our Wells Tech Camp wiki at wellstechcamp.wikispaces.com. You'll find links to the archive video as well as those notes pages, as well as the full schedule of topics that we discussed that day. And in addition, we have a Flickr set of images. See if I can show it on my screen, of all of the fun, starting with pictures of prizes. We haven't even mentioned that we had a nice dinner at Kaiserhof restaurant in New Ulm, where we met up with about 20 of the people that were attending the session. And then we have photos of food. Somebody laughed and said, Sally, I bet you took the pictures of food, because women like to take pictures of food. But yeah. Photos of registration, photos of sessions throughout the day, and all the way through to photos of those that won our prizes. And speaking of Sela, here's a picture of Sela and her happiness, maybe. If I click on it, there we go, as she grabbed her brand new iPad from the giveaways. So congrats to her.
Neat. And you took a bunch of candids with your iPad too, right?
I did. So they're all there. Even Bill Peckrell from Martin Luther College took pictures as well. So we have a good mashup of photos there if you want to relive the day or look and see if those of you that attended, if you're captured in any of the pictures, they're all out on Flickr for you to check out.
Yep. So let's play a few of those that you took of people's impressions, you know, of the conference. You had probably, I'd say 15, 16, 17 people that you walked around and asked, you know, what their thoughts were, what they learned. So why don't we look at that now?
My name is Rebecca Marty, and I learned about how to use Google in my classroom.
Excellent.
Love it. I am Becky Lang, and I learned more about how to use the smart technology in my classroom.
My name is Tom Graffy, and I spent a lot of time learning how to stream the services through the internet.
Hi, I'm Julie Schmudlock, and I went to a conference on Google Chromebooks and also on the smart board.
Hi, I'm Tim Schrader, and I learned multiple ways to use online Bible classes.
Hi, my name is Molly Ring, and I learned today that Google Drive has so much to offer.
My name is Anna Endorf, and I learned I don't know as much as I thought I did.
I'm Kurt Gostick, and I helped teach people about bringing their own device and one-to-one computing.
I'm David Leonard, and I learned how to use Google Administration with Google Apps for Education.
I'm Ted Plug, and I help people understand that Chromebooks are important in education.
Hi, my name is Ron Wells, and one thing I've learned today is that there's a lot of opportunity for someone who wants to start online Bible classes, because we aren't doing enough of them yet, apparently.
My name is Philip Wells, and one thing I'm discovering today is that there's a lot of people with a lot of really interesting ideas. This is really fun.
My name's Aaron Spite, and I've learned that we have a lot of tech people, and we need content writers and authors to provide content for our websites.
I am Corey Putz from St. Matthews in Winona. Been a great day so far. We've learned quite a bit about website design and content.
Rich O'Dean from St. Matthews, Winona. Several good discussions regarding web and video content.
Hi, Jeremy Church from Winona, St. Matthews, and had some good discussions about SmartWorks.
Hi, my name is Becky, and one thing that I learned today is that there's a lot more that goes into staying connected online and trying to get all your worship stuff there than I ever thought there was.
My name is Brandon Steenbach, and I think the coolest thing I'm taking away is that there are a lot of people in our synod who are really doing a lot of things with technology. And I think that's really cool, and it means that there's a network that's growing and people that I can bounce ideas off of. And I just learned today that I can schedule posts on Facebook, which is huge for me because I can usually only remember to do that in the mornings. So that'll give me Facebook posts all day without having to think about it, so that's awesome.
I'm Drew Willems from Shoreland Lutheran High School in Summers, Wisconsin.
He causes trouble.
So I'm Drew Willems from Shoreland Lutheran High School.
He is Drew Willems.
This is Ted Klug from Lakeside.
Yes.
And we're excited about implementing Chromebooks one-to-one in our high school.
Excited.
You look excited.
Okay. Yes.
Thanks for doing that, Sally. And sometimes it's tough just putting people on the spot, you know, putting them on camera, so to speak, if they're not used to that. And but I think you got a flavor of all the things that, at least in the morning sessions, that we talked about.
You know, it's tough, and it's also maybe goes back to our book discussion we had started last week called The Shallows, where it takes time to actually process things. And I think when you walk away from a conference like that, there's probably a lot more takeaway from it than you realize in the moment, because you need time to kind of absorb what the discussions were and relate them to how you're going to apply that to your ministry efforts.
Right. Before we leave the topic, we should talk a little bit about some of the most popular things that were talked about. Our viewers and listeners might be interested in, you know, what the unconference attendees were excited about. I'd say, in general, the most popular sessions had to do with, at least for teachers, certainly the Google stuff. So we had a session on Google Chrome, so the browser and all that brought to the table. We had one on Chromebooks. So I think there's a lot of buzz around those. A couple others, one of you mentioned already, Sally, mobile apps, a lot of people there contributing. Smart boards, of course, and online Bible study was one that was well attended.
Yep, in my particular room, that was the challenge. I was a host, so I couldn't pick and choose sessions, but I was excited about the sessions that happened in my room. They were all, for the most part, web design, website centric. So I was able to point them to our book from this past summer, Martin, and other resources and things that I'm aware of, but I learned a lot in the process as well. There was a lot of great sharing, people doing creative things on a lot of different web platforms, and one discussion was focused just on accessibility and, you know, blind and deaf users of the web and ways that you can make your website a lot more usable for them as well. So cool. Good discussions.
Very good. So stay tuned for more about a future conference. We're thinking about one for next year. This one will be maybe a full-blown technology and ministry conference. So details to follow.
And we won't forget the coffee.
That's right. Let's move on to our ministry resources section. News here, Sally.
Yeah, I actually heard from a couple of our listeners. Brent Nimmers at Atonement in Plano sent me a link first to an article that broke last week on CNET is where he pointed to. Let's see if I can share my screen. I'm not super coordinated this morning for some reason with the screen sharing stuff.
Have you coffee?
I haven't had coffee. I need it, huh? The article was, Microsoft is now offering free versions of Office 365 to nonprofits. So this is an excellent ministry resource for all you churches out there to tap into. You can head over to the Microsoft site and read about all the things that they have available for nonprofits. And we'll have a link specifically in the show notes to this Office 365 for nonprofits. So this is the cloud-based version of Microsoft Office, and it's a pretty robust thing. Professional email, calendar, HD video conferencing, and more, along with all the Office software. It's totally free for nonprofits now. You can get a free trial and find out if your organization qualifies on this page. I think this is a big breakthrough. I did read that they have an offline component, in other words, installing Office software locally on your computer to sync with Office 365. And that for nonprofits, I believe, is $4.95 a person per month.
Yes. Yep. So there's, yeah, just make sure you know what you're getting into. The free one is not going to let you download and install, you know, the Office suite. It will provide online versions of those, which are a little bit more stripped down, so you don't have all the features, although for many cases, in just general word processing, those are going to be fine. It does provide Link, which is the video conferencing tool. Think of Skype, same kind of product. Email management, all those kinds of things are going to be maybe all that a church or school might need. So you may want to take a look at that. And then if you want to take the next step, and we're testing that out here in the Synod office too, Office 365 for the $5 or $4.50, whatever it is, per person per month, that gives you the downloadable copies of the whole Office suite. So you have to kind of do the math, see if that makes a difference for you as far as, you know, cost. But I think Microsoft is figuring that this is a market that they want to take a stab at, and they have in general pretty good nonprofit pricing. So I think they're just extending that to their Office 365 subscription model.
So I guess one of the themes that did come out of Wealth Tech Camp for me, at least in the web design stuff, was people are looking for economical solutions. And, you know, I know many of our churches and schools probably use the free open source word processing suite, Open Office, just to avoid the cost associated. But here's a chance to up the ante, I guess,
yep,
and have this cloud-based solution, obviously competing with Google Drive and things, but a very robust solution, even just if you go completely cloud-based.
Yep. Try it out. It's easy to try and see if it works. If not, what have you lost? Really nothing. So, Sally, should we move on to our tips of the week?
We should. I think you're first.
Yep. This is a new segment. We started it last week and now week two. And my tip of the week, I've talked about in the past. This is a very simple one. It's the use of the Windows key. So this is for you Windows users. Let me do a quick screen share of my little tip sheet here. This, what I'm sharing, is a Windows help file on the Windows key and all the shortcuts that go with it. But I really only want to focus on one, and that's just simply pressing the Windows key on your keyboard. When you do that, depending on whether you're in Windows 7 or Windows 8, essentially the same thing happens. When you press the Windows key in Windows 7, the Start menu pops up. And your cursor is in the search area down at the bottom. In Windows 8, you go to the Start screen, and you can start typing search terms as well. Either way, the reason that this is my tip is it is probably the fastest way to launch an application. I know many of you probably click on the Start button, open up the Start menu or Start screen, and then find whatever it is that you want to start, Word or Excel or Internet Explorer or File Explorer, and you click that. So that's 2-3 clicks to get to your application. You have to take your hands off the keyboard to do it and go to the mouse. This is a way that you can keep your hands on the keyboard. All you do is you hit the Windows key and you start typing the name of the application you want to open and hit Enter. So if I wanted to open up Word, I'd hit Windows and then start typing WOR and hit Enter, and Word's going to start. Or if I wanted to start Internet Explorer, I could type Windows key INT, Enter, and I have not, my hands have not traveled from the keyboard to the mouse and then back again. It'll work that way for almost every application you have installed on your system. Just absolutely the quickest way to get things open. And there's a similar keyboard combination on the Mac. It's the Windows space bar, and then start typing your app, and then you open up the search tool on a Mac. But for Windows users, this is probably a way maybe you haven't really explored in opening apps, and you can find anything on your system this way as well. You could search contacts, you could search files on your local hard drive or SkyDrive if you're using that. But it's a great application launcher. Just hit that Windows key and type away.
I have a funny story about the Windows key or the start launcher or whatever you want to call it. And that is at Wells Tech Camp, I wanted to show them Notepad because I was talking about pasting content into Notepad. I think that was my tip of the week last week on the show. And I hit that start button and I hit shut down on the computer that was driving the whole conversation. And all of a sudden my computer was shutting down. I didn't even know what had happened. I just was not in the zone for sure. And so, yeah, we waited for my computer to shut down and we waited for it to start back up and me to start everything over again. It was a real brilliant moment on my
part. We are creatures of habit because when you hit the Windows key, that's your cue to start the shutdown.
Apparently that's all I do with that thing. So I need to
now you have another reason to hit the Windows key.
There you go. All right.
Allie, what's your tip?
So my pick of the week is actually a twist on image editing, which I enjoy using the PicMonkey website to do online image editing. It's a great Web 2.0 tool. And in this case, I'm going to show you how to create a collage that leaves some space for text overlay. Now, oftentimes we'll add images to a collage and we'll fill up all the slots as we're building the collage and whatever software you like to use. But then your text has to kind of fit on top of your pictures. And at times I'd like the text just to be separate. So if I add several images to my collage, there's not a great place to put text. Maybe what I'd do instead is this tip, leave one of the image slots empty. Then you can save your collage. I'll do a quick save to my desktop. And when you're done saving your collage, you can actually exit the collage maker and instead go over to the edit a photo option. And from there, you can upload your collage. And with the edit tools in PicMonkey, you can add text. So the collage has a nice spot saved in it to add text.
I see what you're doing. Okay. That makes sense.
And I think it makes it nicely balanced and stuff. So maybe it'd say, welcome back to school. It's just not the most intuitive thing to leave an area of your collage blank. But I think it works well when you're trying to add some text with it, have a spot designated for that.
Right.
You can put the text in a nice location and center it. And then when you're all done adding your text, you could save that image with the text in the open area there. So just a little tip for using PicMonkey in a creative way.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right, Sally, let's move on to our picks of the week.
Okay. And I will go first, and I'm going to share with you Grovo.com. It's an online learning site that I came across last week, and I signed up for a free account, and they are specifically targeting video tutorials around different web tools that are available. So if you want to learn about Etsy or Gmail or Chrome or your browser or Google Plus or whatever, they have all these lessons. Like for Chrome, they have apparently 80 lessons available. Internet fundamentals, search and discover, protect your reputation, the very timely and appropriate lessons. And they offer a set of these for free. Not everything on the site is free. There's pricing around the training, but it looks to be very professionally done and an easy way to get up to speed on different software that's available. And the video tutorials are typically pretty short. They have different learning tracks available. And I want to say the video, you know, definitely are less than 10 minutes each. They have quizzes associated with them if you want to quiz your knowledge, all kinds of interesting things to do at grovo.com. So if you're looking to invest a little time and get up to speed on some Web 2.0 tools and that kind of thing, I think this might be a site that you could check out and make use of. Grovo.com.
Very good. That's cool. Just kind of a little bite-sized instructional videos.
Exactly.
For you. So they're apparently they're of decent quality.
Yeah, I was really impressed on the few that I've watched so far.
Okay, very good. My pick is something we've talked about in the past, not as a pick, but I think news in tech, and that's a product from Google called the Chromecast. And the Chromecast is a little HDMI device that you plug into your television set or your projector. And it needs power, so there's a little USB port here that you can plug in to a power source. And what it does is it allows you to send content, video or audio content or even screen content, from your computer or device, can be a tablet or a phone or a computer, to this device, and it will display on the big screen, which is very cool because it has some great classroom applications. Just recently, I learned that if you have a class full of Chromebooks, you can, if you've got this set up correctly, the Chromebooks just need to be on the same network. This is a wireless device, so you connect it to your Wi-Fi. And if the device, the Chromecast, and your Chromebook are on the same network, there's a little button that appears in the upper right of your screen that if it's a tab, or there's a little button on your phone or tablet that does the same thing, that will allow you to send the content of whatever's on your screen, your personal screen, to the big screen. So a teacher could use this for screen sharing. A student could use this so that you could tap a student and say, hey, show your work, whether it's a Google Doc or a Google presentation, something like that, that could easily be shared with the class from the student's own desk. The price is $35, so it's very inexpensive. And it's very easy to set up. So you just set it up, and then what would appear once you click on the little share icon is all the devices that would be listed here. I don't have one set up here in the office, but if I did, I'd have a whole list of them once I clicked on that button, and then the ability to basically send the content of your tab or your YouTube video or Netflix, whatever, it'll send all of those right over to the screen. Very easy. I think the technology quotient is very low as far as what you need to know to make this thing work. It's really a three-step process. Once you plug this thing in, you just need to get it on the right Wi-Fi network, give it a name so that when you click on your little share button, you can see which maybe room or television you want to share it to, or projector. And basically, it sends it over. What really happens, though, which is kind of unique versus, you know, some of these other tools, let's say AirPlay, you're not sending the signal from the device to the Chromecast. You're actually telling the Chromecast what URL to go and find. So it really needs to be online content, of course. So it can't be a personal video that you have on a local machine. But if it's a YouTube video or a Google Doc or something in a tab, which is obviously coming from the internet, then it goes out and displays that in its own browser window or its own video player. So that's the Chromecast. And these are now, I think, generally available. It was very hard in the beginning to get these because they were so popular. But now they're fairly easy to get your hands on. And just comes in a small little box. You plug it in, you give it power, and away you go.
I just read a post from John Dorn down at Illinois Lutheran High School saying that he was using Chromecast and that he was quite impressed with it. I'm not sure. I think he mentioned that he's experienced Apple TV and it was a little bit lower, maybe not as
speedy
as Apple TV.
A little more latency to get it started. Yeah, I read that too. Yeah. Once you're in, it's fine. So
exactly. So, and what?
It's a third of the price of an Apple TV. Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome.
Plus, you can do it from a Mac, Chromebook, a Windows machine, any device, or almost any device that supports it. With Apple, you're kind of locked into whatever they would support. So,
sure.
It's worth the effort.
All right.
Let's move on, Sally, to community feedback.
I'm trying to share my screen. Let's see if I can do that. I have several links that were shared via our DIGO group that I wanted to bring up today. First, from Gail Potratz, she shared a link to commonsensemedia.org and their K-12 digital literacy and citizenship curriculum. This is something I think we've talked about on the podcast in the past, Martin. Maybe even I think you saw someone using this in the classroom, but Gail tagged it again and said it was a great curriculum and I think it's worth sharing. They have free materials and they're all laid out nicely for you teacher types to get scope and sequence curriculum type materials. They have classroom posters, colorful posters to remind students about digital citizenship and device care and maintenance. They have toolkits, lots of great resources here to educate your kids. I noticed that they have best apps and all kinds of videos available. They have information about one-to-one and information about educating families as well. So Common Sense Media seems like a great place to start for those of you that here at the beginning of the school year are trying to bring your students up to speed with their responsibilities and digital citizenship type issues.
Very nice. Yeah, I did see it. I think it was when I was visiting up in Oshkosh where they were having a whole unit, I think one semester unit on digital citizenship, and they were using this course to go through, and it had handouts and PowerPoints and the whole bit. So nicely done.
Next up, Jason Schmidt shared a couple of links. One is educade.org, and the fact that they have all kinds of lesson plans online for teachers to make use of, primarily using all kinds of digital tools. I noticed Minecraft listed, and I want to say I saw some others here that I recognized other names, Angry Birds, and just a lot of different games and things where they're tying it into lessons. And all of that is available at educade.org.
I get the name now. Arcade, education.
There the mix. You go.
Yeah, got it.
Gamifying, huh?
Cool.
And also from Jason.
Of education. So.
Yeah. Also from Jason, online-stopwatch.com is a place where you can download a free, I think it's a FlashBit-based file, so you can have stopwatches on your computer desktop, so it can count down to something, it can count up to something. There's other versions of it, a bomb timer, so a bomb goes off when the time is up, or a kind of a clock countdown, a lot of different little small Flash-based apps that you can download and make use of in your classroom. And I know that's really popular as you're assigning the students a task. Maybe you're going to give them 5 minutes to complete it, and they can see this timer. It kind of floats on top of everything else on your desktop and kind of keep up with where they are and how much time they have left.
Sweet.
And then a couple of links from Ryan Rosenthal, who's at Faith in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. One is called teachingcopyright.org. Again, a full curriculum to bring students up to speed on copyright, definitions of copyright, history of copyright, fair use, peer-to-peer file sharing. Each of these 60-minute lessons, plus a whole bunch of handouts and support documents that are available for you to make use of for free from teachingcopyright.org. And then finally from Ryan, a page, I think we've featured this on the podcast before, of graphic organizers. So if you're looking for something for your students to do clustering or different types of graphical organization of their thoughts, perhaps for an English class where you're having them do writing, or as an extension, a writing extension in any type of class, these graphic organizers could be helpful to you, and you can download them. It looks like they have them in PDF and Word format, as well as in web format, HTML. So this is from thinkport.org, and we'll have the link in our show notes.
Cool.
And I think that will do it for community feedback for this week, Martin.
Please consider contributing to our show. Lots of ways to do that. But the simplest way is go to wellstech.wells.net and enter a comment there, or use one of the other tools available there. All the social networks are listed there. Just click on one of the appropriate links in the top right corner, and you'll be talking to us. Share questions. Be happy to try and address those. Comments, suggestions, or your tips and picks of the week would be most welcome. Remember, we're trying to populate our ministry resources area with comments from our viewers, and we're going to have a little contest at the end of this next summer. We're going to put all the ministry resource contributors in the pot, and we will draw a winner, and you'll get a fabulous prize. So
we give good prizes, I
heard. We do. I heard that, too. Just ask the people from last weekend.
That's right.
It's the winners. All right, Sally. Next week, we have Gail with us, correct?
That's right. Gail Potratz from Emmanuel in New London, Wisconsin, is back on the podcast. This might be about her fourth or fifth year to join us as our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent. Gail always brings great experience from the classroom, and this year is her second year using Chromebooks there in New London. So as an administrator of Chromebooks, year two, we're going to hear about her experiences, the kids' experiences. Very popular topic, it seems, those Google things. And so let's hear it from someone who's living it. And that's what we'll do next week.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. Let's close the show with the music of Corbin Creek, Psalm 13. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
used to wrestle with my thoughts, and every day have sorrow in my heart, and every